Almost 4 years ago, we set off on our podcast journey. After the release of this episode today, we're now at 100 episodes of the Goldust podcast. We would like to thank every guest that's contributed to the podcast from the day that it started, and to every listener who's tuned in. We're grateful for all of the support from everybody involved. With that being said, welcome to the 100th episode of the Goldust podcast. If you haven't already, click subscribe and look out for new episodes releasing every other Friday. We do hope everybody also enjoyed our last episode with Stephen Daly, MBE. Before we do introduce today's guest, we do want to mention our partnership with clothing company, Capo. The meaning behind the brand runs much deeper. The Northwest of England clothing brand strive to provide premium aesthetic fitting and quality clothing at affordable prices. Check out their products at www.capouk.com and on Instagram at CapoUK. Now for today's guest, here is a snippet of what to expect.
You don't have to be a coach, you have all the answers. I think I always probably saw the role of the coach as, you know, I'm a teacher and you massively, certainly for academy football, you're teaching. I think now you're guiding, you're shaping, you're supporting and you're learning. Like, I talked to all the boys last year about this, was about 10, 15 games, and I'm saying to them that, you know, like lads, I'm every game's a reference point, so I'm learning as we go. I've got 15 references. But I pointed out the captain said, you've got 400 and the goalkeeper's got 400 and you've got 300 and you've got 100 and you... So why look at me for all the answers? Let's work together on it and, you know, and be a collective that we can get to the end point. So I think that, no, you don't have to have all the answers, but you have to have some guidance and some, you know, you've got to know where you want it to go and how it wants it to look. They can sometimes join the dots even better than we can as coaches.
We're excited to welcome our friend Adam Temple onto today's episode of the podcast. Adam is currently assistant manager at Barrow Football Club. And prior to taking the role at Barrow, Adam spent several years coaching at Manchester City in their academy and has worked with some of England's brightest footballers. Today, for the 100th episode, Adam shares some Goldust with you.
Morning, Keith. Morning, David. How are you doing, guys?
Good, thank you. Yeah, good to have you with us.
Yeah, likewise. Lovely to be on.
Look, to us, Goldust is sprinkling particles of knowledge to help people for the greater good. What does Goldust mean to you, mate?
I thought a lot about this one because obviously being a big fan of the podcast, as you know, from the off, really, I think there's some real different variances on it. I think the ultimate one for me is it's something rare and kind of special, something unique, that if it can become something as part of a bigger, a kind of something even bigger, even better. And I think that can kind of transcend it into coaching, into daily life. It can be a little snippet that grows, or it can be something that keeps building and building into that kind of greater good, that greater being.
Adam, before we delve into the discussion, would you mind sharing just a brief intro on yourself, including your coaching background?
Yeah, I think the fancy title is career coach, which basically means that I didn't do anything as a footballer, as a player myself, that probably realised quite young that I wasn't going to be a footballer. I think every kid who's into football loves that idea of becoming that. That was certainly my aim from a young age, but didn't really take down that route. Wasn't good enough, wasn't everything. There's plenty of excuses for people throughout, but for me, it just purely that wasn't good enough to be. That was more talented around kind of athletics. That was my more of a skill, but actually my passion, my love was football. So kind of started really young in terms of just as a school project, helping my brother's junior team out in coaching. And that just kind of really quickly like built into a work experience at opportunity at Man United, becoming a kind of YTS scholar coach, like community kind of scholar as at Man United at 16. And then been in ever since. I was at Man United for 15 years all in, right across different ranges, different roles in the community scheme. And later off to the foundation as it became. Working on the pre-academy, the girls' team, disability football. So really wide ranging within that. Worked briefly at Oldham Athletic in the academy there. Worked at Man City then for getting on for 10 years. And then work in between that with the England disability squads. So that's where me and Keith first started working together way back. So yeah, so and then obviously now at Barrow AFC as assistant manager there, so real kind of wide ranging experience over kind of 24, kind of 25 years almost now, getting on for.
I heard then, tell me I'm wrong here, athletics rather than football. I've seen you running. It's going to be one of the running. It's going to be one of the throwing events.
There's only a slight difference in my ability from running to football, but no, I think on that, I think it's easy to say and to build up. Like, I'd love to have a playing career, and I'd probably have to adapt differently as a coach, not having that. But equally, I don't want to pretend. And I think I hear people sometimes like, "Well, I could have been this, I could have been that." Like, ultimately, I look at lads who've gone on and achieved that. I think you become a footballer by being a footballer. That wasn't me. I wanted to be that. I had the passion and the drive and the determination. I just didn't have the ability and the thing, though. Athletics, I think I've got a big thing around. There's a level to everything. So I was doing relatively well in athletics at one point and ran at the indoor arena at Birmingham. And 800 metres ran my best ever time, and I came last. And I think that's the teaching of that is that in every sport, in every level, there's someone better than you. There's a kind of cap to where you're at. So yeah, I'm not for 1 minute saying I was Usain Bolt or the like, but that was, I was slightly better at that, I think.
I like every conversation that we have, there's always honesty around it. So we admire that. I've seen your work. So I've seen your work coaching. So whether you're, as you call it, a career coach, I can see how and why you've forged a good working relationship in the sport itself because of the ability that you have and what you bring. Now, let's just pull it back a little bit. What initially sparked your interest in coaching and led you to pursue it as a career?
I remember it quite clearly, to be fair, in terms of a project in PE. I wasn't great in school. I was okay, but I wasn't great by any stretch. But PE was my real kind of passion, the subject that really hooked me and really got me. And I think for kids now, there's always a hook. When I look at academy football, there's always a hook. It's finding that. That was certainly mine. And a project came about where you had to do a coaching kind of module or whatever it was. And I took it on with my brother's team. And I loved it. And I just, like, and he's like five, 6 years younger than me, but a bit younger than me. And the lads now, we were kind of socialised with now, but I was coaching them and helping out one of the dads who was running the team. But I just really took a passion to it and really enjoyed doing it. And then went on work experience again. I was a ball boy at Man United, as the school had a link with Man United. I was a ball boy there. And then as part of that, I asked, could I go on work experience as part of the community scheme? And went in every day for 2 weeks and just loved it. I'm a massive part of it. Again, a lot of the guys that who were there then in my work experience, I'm still close with now. I worked with them for a while and still close with them. Still class a lot of as mentors, and people give me opportunities really early on. But it just really, like, kind of sparked this interest that I loved football, I loved it, and I loved kind of connecting with people. And I think that was, you start to sense, and this is something maybe I could do as a career that would interest me. Going to university didn't really interest me at that point. I didn't see myself going on to further education, but going into becoming a coach was something that was really kind of really appealing for me.
Adam, in what ways have your life experiences, whether that be in or out of sport, influenced or shape your beliefs and perspectives on how you coach?
I think I've referenced one there. There's always someone better. So I think the need to work hard, I think, comes from that. But equally from my family upbringing. My dad's self-employed, carpet fitter, and also runs. And again, part of my athletics bit was he was a runner, or still is a runner now to this day. So seeing him, how hard he worked and was really like constantly trying to build and grow. I think that was ingrained in me from really early on. I think the upbringing I had in terms of my family, but also my friends, who a big group of friends now is lads I kind of went to nursery with at 4 years old, so we kind of built all the way through a similar kind of build. They all do really varying roles in life. There's not many, I don't think anyone works in sport from my friends, but they're obviously natural influences that are around you constantly. So I think your upbringing brings that kind of the personal side of it, if obviously the friendship group, personal side of it, seeing my influences, my dad was a massive influence for me. And that shapes you, and that shapes you into how you become and what you see as what I try and do as a coach is just be me. I think you can put on, I think you need to wear different hats. but they always have to be your hat. They always have to be hats that suit you, and this hats that I wouldn't wear as a coach, and hats that suit me, if you know what I mean by that analogy. So yeah, I think definitely we've probably not. Only when I think you only reflect on that, don't you, later on? But that's certainly looking at my career so far. I think that's definitely been something that has been ingrained in me from a young age, and I've kind of absorbed it as a child growing up with my family and certainly my friendship group as well.
Well, you mentioned earlier on you were at Man City, so you worked there for a period within the academy. As everyone will know, they've done and are doing very well. And they've had a lot of academy boys either play with the first team or move on elsewhere. While you were at Man City, what players did you coach that have later gone on to actually make professional appearances within the game?
I think I'm really fortunate that there's loads of them, and I'm always really cautious with this because I think obviously the natural ones you'll know now that you see the Man City squad, you see the young players, Rico Lewis, Mike Hamilton, obviously done really well recently and made his debut and scored. Boys that obviously I was fortunate to work with. There's other boys I think that'll break through within the next, or boys, I say boys like lads now, within the next year or so, I think we'll come through again and again been fortunate to work with them. Cole Palmer's obviously one that's flying in the minute, the Premier League. There's other lads, Tommy Doyle, Taylor Bellis, Shea Charles. Callum Doyle at Leicester was one that was in my group for a couple of years, wasn't probably the high flyer in that group at that time, but has just worked and worked and kind of really kicked on as he's gone on. But I think it's, again, I'm cautious with it because I've just done it. I'm not that cautious because I've just done it, but I'm good because I think it's, you're just around, I think when you're in them environments, you're around so much quality. And you play, as I said, the Goldust kind of analogy, you play such a small part within that. I always challenge the word kind of produce players, because I think if you did, you'd have that kind of level of player every single year. You'd have a Cole Palmer coming through, a Phil Foden coming through Man City every year, because production for me is a recipe. You put this and this together and it ends up with that. Production would be Coca-Cola. Wherever you go in the world, it tastes the same, because it's this, and this makes that. I think it's more obviously developing. So you're seeing them lads. And I was at some relatively young ages, 12, 13. And you saw talent, you saw, I think, but equally, you saw other lads that have, were higher flies in that group that have had to go different routes. And I take as much pride as a goalkeeper last week who played Accrington, and he's on the bench for Accrington. And people wouldn't recognise his name, wouldn't know it, but that's as much of a kind of a benefit for us as the work we did back then, to see him going and having a career as much as the boys who were kind of being recognised and noticed at the top level.
What inherent quality had to each and every one of those players that you've mentioned? And there'll be others that are working and coming through the process. What is it that they all possess?
I think they all possess, the common one would all be passion. They all love playing football, and I think that's the biggest challenge, I think, for academy coaches, or for any coach, I think, is to keep that passion burning. And the flame will obviously go stronger and weaker at different points when they come across different challenges. But I think you've got strength. My biggest fear as a coach would always be that I'd put that flame out and I'd kill that passion for them just playing football. And I think the way I'd explain that is that we used to have battles with like the sports science argument around loading and stuff. And obviously, as you're going through them early adolescent years, they're having lots of kind of growth kind of conditions and not injuries, but they're managing that growth period. And we say we're loading, we've got to be careful what they're doing on the training pitch, careful what they're doing on game day. But actually, when you look at them and they get to school in the morning, they play football on the playground, and they have the first break and they play football, and they have the lunchtime break and they play football. So we used to go, obviously a lot of boys were at St. Bede's at the school, we'd go and pick them up on the bus, and they come on, they're sweating because they've been playing on the playground thing. So they all love playing football, they all love that. And that's a really easy one. I think as people who play football, I think you love it. I think you think the challenge is to keep that growing. I think then you look at that's, I think there's lots of players who love it. It's not enough just to love it. I think they all have then different things that some are really kind of steady and they grow year to year. Some are slow burners and you've got to just keep waiting and giving them waiting for that opportunity. But the real common one is that they love playing and they have that real passion for playing football. And it's important to grow that, I think.
So part of the development of a young player is the background and the parents and the guardians that help support them. What advice would you give a parent or guardian who has a young player at an academy?
I think the easy one's to relax. It's not easy to relax, obviously. It's not. It's the unknown. I think that's the biggest challenge parents have, is that they don't really, unless they've been through it before with an older sibling, it is the unknown. They don't know what thing, and every year seems like the most important year, and every year seems like this matters. And I think I always used to say to parents, like, imagine that first moment as a parent, and I'm obviously fortunate I've got two beautiful children, that that first moment when you get your baby put in your arms and you look at your baby, you're not then looking going, oh, he's going to be a footballer, or she's going to be a footballer. It's just your baby. So don't ever come away from that moment of that being your child. But equally, I think on the flip side of that, I think coaches and staff have to understand that as well, that as parents, that's their goals. You know, we talk about goals, but that's their actual piece of goal. That's the most important thing in their life. So you've got to kind of take that understanding as well. I think for parents, I think it's kind of be a parent. That's the best advice I always gave, was be a parent. So if you feel your child's upset and suffering almost, or not happy because of the way me as a coach was dealing with them, then please come and challenge that. If your child's upset because it's hard or it's demanding, then support them on that journey. And I think it's really kind of taking that balance. If they're going to go down this kind of elite, as such, I don't like that word, too young, but that elite pathway, it's going to be challenging, it's going to be demanding, and it's just the best role they can have as parents is being supporting. And so it's being relaxed, it's knowing that if they're going to get to where they're going to get to, they will do, as long as the kind of support and the people around them are, again, big one I think was treating them right. And that's one I always say to parents, if you don't feel that I'm treating your child right, please come and challenge me, and please come and think, I'll be upset by that. If you think I'm being demanding and challenging on your child, then support me on it and let's talk and let's work together. But I think the ultimate one I really focused on this probably the last 2 or 3 years around my kind of academy journey was really trying to take the perspective a lot from the parent's eyes and work with the parent. I think my initial approach was that I'm there for the child and not the parent, and the parent should just be there and watch and support. And think I probably adapted and changed that to try and work more with parents and involve the parents more along that journey, because ultimately the parents are the expert in that child, and we as coaches want to get as much information to work the best way we can with the thing. And I think there's loads of good work goes on, but actually you're kind of losing out on the professor of that child. The ultimate expert of that child is a parent. So let's work with them, let's support them, let's get their insight. And then equally, I think if they felt that you were working together with them, I think the journey almost became a lot smoother and we're all on the same page.
You talked there about working with the parents, building relationships with parents. You also mentioned about treating players well. With that being said, how do you go about building and maintaining professional relationships with your players?
I think it's the most important skill. I think as a coach, it's your number one function is relationship building. I think if you can do that, be that an 8, 9, 10-year-old child, a teenager, we know the stereotypes what teenagers can be like. So now obviously working with senior players, I think it's that finding that connection, finding that way of communicating, of having a relationship with them. That can be different. I think some want it to be kind of lively, bright, kind of energetic kind of relationship. Someone a more subtle relationship. It's that relationship building, I think, as I said, the number one skill. I think for me, it was trying to understand them. And I always remember Mike, but I'll use Mike as an example, Mike Hamilton, that I remember when Mike first came into my group, there was some kind of feedback on him around, like, he struggles with adults, he struggles with communication. So I was like, oh, okay, oh, he's... So I was like, right, look, and I thought I'm just gonna watch him. I'm just gonna see him for a couple of weeks and watch. And the best way to watch anyone is in the natural habitat around him with his mates in the group. And I'm watching him going, he's happy, he's fine. But then when I went over and spoke to him, it was a bit more awkward. And it was just that spell of going, right, okay, I just need to leave him to be like that and just build really slow. And he knew I was there. He knew I was there to support him. He knew I would, in the moment I need to coach him, I would coach him. But I knew that he wouldn't be one that I'd be going, put my arm around him, having the crack with, having the joke with. Like, he wasn't ready for that. Now, Mike and I was totally different to that. And he's really open. He's really a thing. But that's the normal. If you look at any child away from football, that's a normal kind of adolescent procedure that he's grown into a young man now. He wasn't a young man at 12. Some are young men really early, and you can have that kind of banter, a kind of fun relationship with them. Others you need to kind of wait and grow. So it's understanding what's looking back at you, what they, and you kind of get that feel, I think, from what they want the relationship to feel like. And I think as a coach, I think that's important, that you do things on their terms, not your terms. So if they want it to be lively and bright, knowing that, how do you manage that and be able to bring it down? And if they want it to be more kind of reserved, and think, how do you manage that and just bring it up bit by bit to help them grow? Because I think that's a massive part of it. We help them, and we think all our tactical work and technical sessions and all that is the real benefit of players. Often it can be just the other bits of helping them become more aware of themselves, more able to deal with themselves and what's going on inside as they're growing and developing.
You talk about relationship building. Your assistant manager to Pete Wilde, the manager of Barra. What's your role, and how do you work together as a pair?
I think my role first, I kind of way I did some stuff with the staff last year on this, and said, like, for me, I look at all the support staff, me included. For me, every single role we've got, which is support staff after the manager, as PAs. If we look at ourselves, I look at myself as being a PA, which if he is, he's never probably enjoy that, and I've been doing all sorts of tasks for him. But it's, we're there. He's the one who's the ultimate decision maker. He's the one who's got to kind of present and face up to everything and lead as a big group of players and staff. So our job is to kind of inform, support, and kind of enable him really to deliver his job to the maximum and be that. So it comes from a relationship. Obviously, I've known Pete for kind of 20 odd years, and going back to we first met going doing disability work at Man United. He was at Oldham at the time, and just from that, we used to stand on the side. And even that, if you remember it, back at the Cliff, back in, you know, the early 2000s when we first started the disability league there, and it became a football. It became like us against you and whatever. And me and Pete used to stand on the side and laugh and joke and let the kids play and have a real good environment around it. And stay in touch. Obviously, we've worked numerous projects together over years, and then this opportunity came about with him. And for me, it was the unknown. It was going into an environment that I didn't know anything about, and that I think a lot of coaches will have a plan to go, I want to end up as a first team coach or a manager or whatever it might be, working with senior players. I can honestly say I never did. I was really, really comfortable being a development coach, an academy coach. Wanted to try and progress through that, but kind of hit a bit of a wall and knew I needed something different. And this came about through a conversation, and he offered me a role, and I was like, well, it's the unknown. I don't know it. Massive imposter syndrome going into a world that I didn't know as a player. I obviously not experienced it, and as a coach, I'd not experienced it. But having him as a manager, someone that I had trust in, that I had a relationship with, but certainly had trust in, and I knew that he would trust me, I think was a massive factor for me. So it comes again. I think we work together really well. My role's really the football side, in terms of I get the good bits. I get to deliver on the pitch more often than not, and deliver what he wants as the overall plan. He oversees everything, and obviously we'll work on the pitch as well, but we'll kind of guide and support everything right across the club, really. So, I think it comes down to also relationship and trust. I think that's a massive part for me with it.
Well, the pair of you, you've similar type of background, just because none of you have actually played professional football. So anyone listening to this podcast could get inspiration in knowing that, as long as you are committed and, you know, you've got good resources, good mentors, good friendships, but equally a student of wanting to improve your technical proficiency and understanding of the game.
Yeah, 100%. I think Pete's, I joke Pete, like, I call him the encyclopedia, because it amazed me when I first came into this role, kind of started last season, that we'd be talking recruitment and players, and I could obviously help a little bit around, like, under 21 players and players who obviously get into that area. We talk about loans. But every time a player was mentioned, Pete knew about him, and I was like, how do you know? Like, so I have joke, call him this encyclopedia. He knows every player, and obviously doesn't know every single player, but really prides himself on developing that knowledge, that base, everything from down to the National League, National League North, National League South, up to obviously the top end. Like, he has a real kind of ability to really kind of to spot a player, to know a player, to understand where players were at. And he'd say, I think that he'd say that would be his super strength around that. He's obviously got lots of strengths in terms of how he manages and how he creates relationships with players and the trust he builds with players. But I think that helps us both, that we are really similar. We're similar kind of background. We've literally come through it together. And yeah, it does. I think it's we can sometimes put different kind of focuses around what it should look like and it needs to look like around your playing experience or your knowledge base or whatever else. But I think for us, our big driver all the time is we want to have a really good, strong culture, and culture is a word that's thrown out really, really easily. But that environment that we're here to develop, but equally there's a trust, there's an expectation that you're going to come in and work hard and do things right. And you're going to get the same from us. And I think that's, we are just not, we also, we're normal blokes, we're normal people. So let's be that, let's be the best we can of being us rather than trying to kind of cover up what we've not had as players.
Well, moving on from there, Adam, talked a lot about relationships, building relationships with players and so on. Can you break down what your method or coaching formula is for planning coaching sessions for your players?
Yeah, it's probably the wrong time to answer this because it does feel like Groundhog Day after the last 3 or 4 weeks we've had for game, recovery day, prep, match day, minus one, so prep day, game, and just right the way through. There's not been a massive amount with that in terms of, I think you're just literally going, right, what's the next game? As soon as the game's finished, what's the next game need? And we kind of work a game ahead, so we all have our meetings and our planning meetings for the next game before the obviously, so we'll play Saturday, we'll have a meeting before that for the game after that. So we're always trying to work that. And as soon as the game's finished, we're on to the next one. That said, my job is to review and to kind of build around that. Anything we've taken from the game that might help us in the next one, anything that's taken from the game that we can build on a bigger scale. I think the big thing we've tried this year is to have a real kind of clear structure to thing. And almost like it's a methodology or a style, whatever it might be. But it's more just that these are our kind of guiding principles of how we want to look. And is it us? That's a kind of phrase we'll use quite a lot. We'll build off that all the time. So always referring back to making sure that anything that we're delivering is part of our kind of blueprint as such, our kind of overall plan. But equally then, if it's a game now that the game's going to need this and this, we'll put that into the session. So I've looked at this next month coming up now and said, right, these are the 4 or 5 games we've got. These are areas that kind of factors of our game plan that we're going to have to be really strong on. So let's make sure that everything that we deliver over this next month is linked back into that, because we'll have probably 2 days where we can work some more general stuff, and then one game where it's a purely prep day of the next opposition. I think going back to thing, and there's still an element of this now that, but certainly going back to academy stuff, Man City, we had a real clear methodology. We had a week one, we're working on this, week two, we're working on that. I was always massively, and where I probably wanted to go and where I saw myself going was more around individual development. I always say, like, for me, academy football is an individual sport, and that's daft because football's a team game, we all know that, but it's so different. It's so, like, the kids need so many different things at different times. I would always plan my sessions around, right, which 4 or 5 players can I really impact today, which 4 or 5 players can I really build upon, what areas I feel this really suits them. The challenge for that, obviously, making sure that everyone gets what they need from it, but obviously I think there was no kind of shame almost for me to go, well, he can have a bit more because he's probably ready for a bit more. He might be going for a little bit where he's growing, however it is, that he just needs to keep building bit by bit, block by block, and he can have that little bit less, but I'll just keep touching in with him and making sure that he's kind of on track. So I think you can either plan your sessions around individual players. I had a session last week with lads who had not been involved in the game the night before, and I looked at the group, and I think we had 7 players, and 5 of them were forward players, so we naturally did loads of stuff around the top end of the pitch. So you can still plan around players and work for individual players. Our work now is very much around the next game, winning the game. I think ultimately senior football about winning, so we try and plan to win the game, but equally then looking at how do we get better and collectively what we do, and then is there little bits that we can do individually with lads that either as part of a main practice or something along the side that we can kind of top him up with or do some video work with to help them individually.
When you are actually coaching, mate, what should players expect from Adam Temple?
I think the biggest one, and probably the biggest chance I always say would be around it being real to the game. and looking like the game. I think that's certainly the thing they want. If it's not realistic, certainly players now they'll tell you quite quickly. And I encourage that. I ask them to kind of feedback on that if they don't feel it's right or if they need a change. But it's been certainly, I think, I always remember my first build-up session I did with this group now. And it's about four or five sessions in. It's gone really well, my first few sessions. Really nervous first few sessions in senior football. Obviously got a bit of confidence, four or five sessions in, and I delivered a build-up. Again, we don't hide behind. We don't really play from the back. We're not a team that's overly focused on dominating possession. We'd rather get the ball at the pitch and play in their half of the pitch. But there's obviously elements of the game where you do need to play from the back. So I sat up on this session and I planned it all out, but I literally went into autopilot of delivering the Man City model of ultimate build-up. And the session's going on. And all you do as a coach, it's not quite coming off. So I moved my position. I stood behind the goal looking. And your temptation is to go, all right, is it them? What they're doing? I'm looking on. And I just literally said to myself, like, what am I doing? Like, I'm delivering this session that's not for them, that's not relative and not real to what we'll be and doesn't suit the players we've got. So I stopped and I was like, lads, stop. I probably use a stronger word, but it's rubbish. Let's move on. Sorry, it's rubbish. So obviously they all look at you and whatever, and they're waiting for that reaction, that natural kind of, we're getting a bollock in here and it's coming for us. But I went, it's my fault, move on. And I spoke to him afterwards and said, listen, like, I've tried something, it's not right. I'd rather than say, force it and flog the issue and get it, like, it'd be a really bad session, but I've got to stick with it because I've set off on it. I knew it was wrong, let's move on, let's do something different and we'll come back to it. And one of the lads actually spoke to me the day after and said, like, he'd never experienced that. He said, we're all expecting, like, you know, like, it's your fault, it's this. And we all knew what was going wrong. We all knew the session wasn't working because of this and this. And it wasn't realistic. But for you to say, right, it's me, move on. He said, you've got us. I went back on that. So the key thing for that is I can't do that again. I can't keep going, yeah, it's rubbish and it's my fault and I've got the lads on board, but I'm not delivering anything that's functional and useful. But equally, I think it was that honesty, that kind of realism of going, I've got it wrong, let's move on. And equally then, when they get it wrong, I'm going to go for them and expect that honesty for them as well. But it's important, I think, I had that. So in sessions, it has to be realistic. It has to be suitable to the game. It has to be linked back to our model and what we want to be. And ideally, it can't always be this, but ideally it would be engaging and get them thing. And that depends on the day. So if it's a day before a session, I quite often say to lads, it's going to be boring. Listen to this. I need to talk for this bit. Give me your eyes. Give me your ears. If there's anything, throw it in. Please kind of contribute. But listen to me. In a Tuesday session where I'm trying to get them going, I don't stop them as much. I keep them kind of higher tempo. So I think the lads will understand what the session's for and what they're going to get out of the session and when they need to switch on and focus and when they need to put the effort in a run and be competitive.
For those that are out there listening, having a pragmatic approach, but being honest with players is one thing. Being honest with yourself, because you've got to live with yourself when you get back in your car and start driving home and adjusting to what's in front of you rather than actually trying to coach the session. Are you consistent with that, though, throughout, or have been throughout your coaching? Or has that developed over time?
Yeah, no, I think it's something that you develop into. And it's, I say, I think you're in that moment, you put a practice on or a session on, and you start watching, and well, it's not working. This was, like I said, the one I referred to there was literally 11v11. It was more what I was asking them to do that wasn't. And the fair play to the lads, they were trying to do it. But I think it's probably developed into that. I think going early me would have been very much, it's a player's fault, you're not focused, you're not on it. And it's the most simple kind of easy to go to thing. And there'll still be times when that is, and I think it's asking that question as it's going, it's not working, why? And I have like a process on a match day where I look at that and go, well, is it as expected? Where's space? Where's danger? They're the three kind of things that I go for. So is it expected? Is the plan that we've set out work? It's where we won at the game recently where we asked them to press a certain way from goal kicks. And it just needed to be like that all the time. And it's brilliant because the lads are running over to me in a break and going, is this it? So yeah, do it. Like, off we go. And so the problem was solved really quickly. So I think looking at that kind of problem-solving approach has to come from how we approach our sessions as well and going, well, is it right? So I'm creating a problem. I'm creating something that I want them to kind of overcome. But is it realistic? And realism is a massive part. So I think if you want that honest, if you want to be able to be honest, and I can pride myself on, be it this with academy kids or with parents or with senior players now, I pride myself on looking people in the eye and being honest with them and giving honest feedback. But to do that, you've got to be honest about yourself as well. You can't be on a pedestal that you're untouchable and you're kind of, because you lose people really quickly. It's like you do as I say, not as I do sort of thing. So I think you've got to be that. You've got to acknowledge when it's not working because of you, and you've got to acknowledge when it's not working because of them. And you've got to acknowledge when it's not working because we're not ready to solve that problem yet, and we'll keep on it. And that's fine. I think that space is, for certain in development football, I think that's a really good space to be in terms of, this is hard. We're not solving the problem yet, but the problem is a good problem and we can keep up like working to overcome it. That's when you go, well, let's be really comfortable in sitting back and letting them struggle sort of thing. Don't let them struggle when it's your problem and you've created something that's unrealistic that they can't solve. So it might be something as simple as the pitch isn't big enough. So you want them to switch play, but the pitch isn't big enough. Well, they can't because the pitch isn't big enough. And the thing, I think so, and that takes me straight away. I'll share this one with you again around that understanding and that taking from situations. I remember doing a coach education session for a local club back when I was at the community scheme at United. And I said, go and throw some problems at me. And they were saying like, focus and don't know what to do in sessions. And so I delivered a session. I'm talking, like kids were probably 9, 10. And I said to this kid, like, I said, make the pitch bigger. Again, I think we understand what that means. And I look around and he's literally gone around and he's picking the cones up. So I've turned around and like, what are you doing messing about? He went, making the pitch. It looks like I was stupid. And went, I'm making the pitch bigger. I just started laughing. I turned to the coach and said, there's one for us. That's one. But that is one, isn't it? That's one that's me. That's my language that was a problem, not the actual challenge. So it's acknowledging where it's coming from and understanding that and be able to correct that. I think that's the skill. That's the thing. It's got to come from you being willing enough to go, it's not working because of me.
You mentioned in the a couple of things that you feel like are needed in practices. What do you feel that every effective practice, regardless of topic, should contain?
Well, again, I think I'll say realism is a massive one, that it looks like a part of the game. It can't always look exactly like the game of V11 because you got to work differently with that, but it looks like a part of the game. It looks real to what would happen in the game. I think depending on what you're trying to get, so I think where you work on the pitch is massive. You're working at the top end of the pitch. You if you want goals, work at the top end. Work in areas that you'd be in. So again, that's realism. It's where you would be. I think ideally for me, there'd be some engagement. So in terms of them trying to solve it as a team, or them coming to you and talking and that engagement, because are we trying to drill the players or trying to coach the players? I think it was always a challenge for me. And I'd use that as saying, well, certainly when I was at City in the academy, we had a real strong way of playing, real play we believed in and we felt was right. And I think it's been proven right in terms of the quality that's probably come out of the other side. That's certainly supported the boys learning that style of play. But the massive one with me was always, do they understand it? So they can do it, but do they understand why they're doing it? Because we've got to be really careful as coaches that we don't give the answer before the question. So if it's a maths test and you go, these are the answers, right, okay, I know the answers. So when the maths test comes, you get all the answers right. But then when you have to show that process and how you get there, that's where things. So when the challenge or the question is different, can they still come up with them answers? So that engagement of them figuring things out or them being able to talk with me. And certainly now I encourage players a lot now with the senior lads to go, what are you feeling? What are you feeling and what are you seeing? So it might be something more that says to me, I think we just need to be a bit higher from the back line because the gap's too big from the back line to midfield. Brilliant, do it. And sometimes we want to give all the kind of point A is this, point B is that, point C is that. When actually they get the answers really quick because they're experiencing it and they're feeling it in the moment. So me getting their references of what they think and then being able to tweak it and add that, I think something I really strive for in probably most practices or most sessions that I deliver.
It's an art, there's no doubt, because the information, as you know, is always in front of us. I think it's the ability to draw out appropriate questions or answers that can actually help get deeper meaning, which is what you've alluded to. And it's all right asking players to do things, but do they actually understand why? And that's it, that in itself is very, very important. Now, where you're at currently here at Barra, to promote long-term success for the club, how do you balance the need to win games with the need to develop players?
Ideally, obviously, they come hand in hand, but I think it's we know. I meeting with our players now. And the first time when we first went in, we met all the players individually, one to one. And we sat down with the lads who's like got a really good kind of background where he's been and how he's developed over time. He's a really good player. And we sat down, looked him in the eyes, and we said, "We want you gone." And that for the first meeting with anyone, with the manager and assistant, the first time you hear that, and as he looked at him and said, "We want you gone." And he was like, "What?" I said, "Well, not in a bad way, in a really positive way, that we felt he can, or we feel he can go and play higher up and kick on and have a really strong career." But equally, we went into where we felt he could develop and improve that gets, because we've got to look at lads that we want, hungry lads. We want lads who want more. We've got a real blend now, I think, of lads who've had really kind of really long and strong careers. And then some young lads who are really ready to kick on. And I think the balance of that is really nice in terms of the more experienced guys know how it should be done. They've all come kind of from really good winning backgrounds and strong careers, as I say. So they know how it should be done. They can really kind of drive some standards and expectations. Then the young, hungry guys are looking at them and going, "Well, he's done this in the game and I want to do that." And the kind of the balance and respect, I think, is really good between the two. So I think it's ultimately, I think a winning team brings interest. So if we can get the team winning, then the guys who do want to kick on and have careers higher up will get recognised from that. So I think everyone recognises that the team doing well means that individuals then can kind of prosper and do well, and they kind of come hand in hand. But equally, I think for us in the club, the way the club wants to be, I think if we can develop young players, I think from our backgrounds, from Pete's background, from my background, from the staff, if we can support young players in having careers, then brilliant. That's a massive part of what we want to do. So we're really passionate about that. Probably again, from our upbringing, from our development as coaches, we want to see young players kick on, go on. We'd just like to see it on our terms when we're ready for them and we get what we need first off. But no, it's hand in hand. I think for anyone lower leagues, if you can get lads kicking on and having that career higher up, then brilliant. I think that's success. And that's, as I said, right at the start of the conversation, that was something for me as a coach. I take pride in seeing lads having a career and playing. So if that means our lads now can go and kick on, then fantastic.
Well, Adam, you've obviously worked at several levels. So from first starting off to now being at Barrow, I'm sure is a very different experience when you stood on the touchline. I'm sure you've had quite a bit of abuse hurled or things shouted from opposition fans, especially in away games. But there's a lot of things that go on, especially in first team games. And I can imagine at times it being quite distractive. What strategies do you use to maintain focus and productivity when you're on the touchline?
I think this is probably my biggest area. Well, it's not probably. This is my biggest area for development, because the feel of 3 o'clock kickoff, being kind of almost helpless around just wanting to win, and that's been the main outcome of that, and doing anything you can to win. I think that it's really easy then to boil over with referees' decisions, with opposition, and get embroiled in that. And that's certainly an area that I've been really conscious of. Wasn't conscious of it initially, really fell into that hole, and I've kind of out the other side now in terms of trying to really develop that. It's so tough. It's so hard, because you feel like, I remember probably the best way of explaining it, my first game were last season. So my first game was in professional football, away at Stockport County, their first game back in the football league. There's 12,000 on, they've got the drums banging, they had like a documentary being made about them that day, and also a massive day, like, and we go 3-0 up within like 20 minutes, 25 minutes, and I'm shouting on to our captain, and he turned around and looked at me, and I was like, "Sometimes I can't hear you. And I'm trying to shout on this information about the game, and I'm like, "This is really different. This is really different to academy football, where you could literally go on the pitch," and Keith will say, like, we used to joke about it, that the game would be going and I'd be talking to our fullback in the game, or like whatever it might be. So the difference between that around, right, it's the game started and you're there and you're involved, you're part of it, but you're equally like detached from it, I think was that real kind of hole for me in terms of how I manage myself within that. So I think what I've tried to do with it is I referenced it before, the three questions I look at. But once the game starts, what have we planned? What have we expected the game to be from the analysis we've done on the opposition, from what we've set out to be as our plan? is it as expected? Because you can say, is it working? Is it, are they doing what we thought they'd do? Is there anything different? Off the back of that, where's the space in the game? Is it where we thought it'd be, or is it somewhere different? And where we're getting hurt, where's the danger? What are they doing that's kind of affecting us? So having a clearer focus, I think, is massive. Last season, I did stuff where I'd sit in the stand for the first 20 minutes. Pete does that now. Pete will sit in the stand, which will bring him and kind of regulate him a little bit more to let him see the game from that sense. So it's a constant one for me. It's a constant one that I'm not there yet with. It's really tough when decisions go against you, which we've experienced quite a bit. And then what do you react on and what you can't react on everything? What do you react on? What do you leave? What do you, I think I tried to work it as going back to it. Oh, how would it be if I was talking to a fourth official as a player? What would I do then? And how do I build a relationship with him? So trying to talk to him as opposed to shout and lose my temper and whatnot, which I was probably prone to do. So a constant kind of ongoing one, I think, and just staying in the moment, staying. And I used to work with a girl, a psychologist at Man City, who was brilliant for me. I say work with me, she was there as a psychologist, what I was trying to get across, but she was a colleague and we spoke loads. And she did help me massively in terms of myself and how I coached. And she had an acronym around WIN and what's important now. And that's something I'm really using quite a lot now to bring myself back around, right? What can I do that can impact our game now and impact us now, as opposed to getting into the hole of emotion and frustration.
So working from the touchline, providing information that gives you deep focus, because you can be very attached to the experience, the emotion, and then detach from that, and so that you become an integral part to the development of what the game needs for the players at that time. But when you've got Specky shouting you, you've got the managers who are at each other, you've got decisions going against you. That must be a real challenging environment to still stay focused in.
Yeah, it is. And I think, again, some of it comes, again, me and Peter, probably the worst for each other in some ways, because we're the same type of character that we will bite on things and we'll react on things. So I think we've really worked on that and are conscious of that. I think that's the first stage, isn't it? Being conscious of it, of really what impact does it have? There's other ways of dealing with it, there's other ways of managing it. I'm saying this now, we're not there by any stretch, but I certainly think we've improved on it massively from where we were last season. I think it's an ongoing one. I think the spectators and stuff, I think that just becomes, it does become a noise, like you don't really hear that much. Or if you do, it's more, you'll have a bit of a laugh with it. I don't really get too kind of embroiled within that. It's more stuff on the pitch and thinking, how can we impact? How can we win? How can we react to what you're seeing on the pitch? And when it's a decision against you and you feel it's unjust, then you naturally want to challenge that. But I think it's just for us to learn, our learning as we go, that really, once it's done and you can't really impact it. So it's moving on to the next thing and try to keep on us, really, keep focused on us.
So Adam, final question for you. Since working at Barrow, what have you learned about yourself?
A lot, first off, I think that the biggest one obviously going into it was, I spoke to Keith quite a lot about this early on, around kind of imposter syndrome, like, do I belong here? Is this natural for me? I've not been here before as a player, I've not been here as a coach, like, I'm out of my depth, is it that? Can I cope? And it's all them kind of natural kind of questions that you're internally trying to manage. I've kind of come to the point now after 18 months now of working within this kind of level, that's a normal feeling. It's normal for you to experience that. It's how you regulate that and go, well, the only way of knowing that is, if do I belong here, can I work at this level, is by being at this level and working at this level and deciding from the back of that. So I feel like that's the one that I can work at this level. I think every single day it gives me a challenge. It gives me a kind of real drive to knowing that I've got to be at the top of my game, knowing that I'm working with professional players who have got real good knowledge and real good experiences that thing. But equally, I think knowing that you don't have to, as a coach, have all the answers. I think I always probably saw the role as a coach as, you know, I'm going to teach you, and you massively, certainly for academy football, you're teaching. I think now you're guiding, you're shaping, you're supporting, and you're learning. Like I told the boys last year about this, about 10, 15 games, and I'm saying to them that, you know, like lads, I'm every game's a reference point, so I'm learning as we go. I've got 15 references, but I pointed out the captain and said, you've got 400 and the goalkeeper's got 400 and you've got 300 and you've got 100 and you... So why look at me for all the answers? Let's work together on it and, you know, and be a collective that we can get to the end point. So I think that, no, you don't have to have all the answers, but you have to have some guidance and some, you know, you've got to know where you want it to go and how it wants it to look. They can sometimes join the dots even better than we can as coaches. So this is what I want. This is what I'm seeing in the game. And I have a question I say to them. This is what I'm seeing. Is it what you're feeling? Is it what's happening? Because I think sometimes as coaches, you can see something and think that's final. And it might have just been one run. And I said this before, like to the centre-back side, it looks like he's making this run. He said, yeah, he's done it once, but he's not done it since. And they're on every moment. They recognise every moment. So using that question indifferently to, I think often when I use questions in the academy, I knew the answer that I wanted them to come up with. I ask really open questions now that I'm asking them a question, I'm asking what they're feeling, what they're seeing, and taking my lead off what they're experiencing rather than thinking that I've got to give everything from my view. Naturally, I think I've got to see things, I've got to feel what's happening within the game, but they're the ones experiencing it, so I can work with them and off them a lot more. So that's probably something that I've really enhanced and used a lot more. I think I've learned that I'm good at building relationships. I can build relationships, and that's my strength ultimately. And I can work, and ultimately I can work with older players and senior players. So that's been a massive kind of thing that I always probably felt, but certainly that I've kind of learned and acknowledged now, I think.
Adam, thanks ever so much for today. This has been very insightful. It just goes to show that we don't have to go too far to find out there's some very bright young coaches out there as well, and I include you in that. Thanks for your time. And on behalf of David, myself and the listeners, we wish you well and continue the success.
No, thank you guys. Obviously, I enjoyed doing it. I think for me, this is a massive one that this, I had a bit of imposter syndrome going on this today because obviously, as you know, I'm a massive fan. The level of guests that you have. So if I can add a little bit to sharing some of my experiences, then brilliant. But no, it's massive for me as well to dig deeper into. I think what you do great on this with this podcast is you enable people to really dig deeper into what they feel and think around different situations. So I've obviously listened a lot to that and recognize that listening to the podcast, but certainly enjoyed doing that myself today. So thank you and good to see you both.